translation by Srila Prabhupada, the highest perfectional ingenuity is the personal perception of my abodes, and this has been possible because of your submissive attitude in the performance of severe penance according to my order. So this, of course, you know, this has been a very, very nice conclusion to our previous exchanges in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam all began with the impetus, at least the story we're hearing, of the sages of Naimisharanya being dissatisfied, you know, with their welfare activities, and they didn't know how to do good for people. They were doing fire sacrifices. So they asked Sudha Goswami. He told them the proper sacrifice was this. It was hearing, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, Danyam Svasti Ayato Mahat, all successful, all blissful, all perfect. You know? So then they began to hear from Sudha Goswami how he had heard the conversation between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit directly, you know. So it's like, again, someone asking somebody who's directly been there when Prabhupada was talking about something, you know, very one generation away. You know? And they know Sutta. Okay. So then he goes through describing, eventually he describes how Brahma spoke the Bhagavatam to Narada Muni. You know? And then Maharaj Pariksit asks these questions about how did Narada Muni expand the ideas, how did he present them in different ways, you know, how did he explain the structures of the universe, you know, how did he explain the origin of creation, all these things. And then Sukadeva Goswami begins to answer, and he answers that the experience of who we are realized when we see Krishna. And so then there's a whole history of how Brahma had this experience, you know, how he realized who he was. You know, he did his austerity tapa and such nice classes, you know, and Vidagdaji describing his fructivorian existence and how tapa has to be with the right attitude. It's interesting, this word seems so important. In the beginning of Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says that one's advancement in devotional service is dependent upon his attitude. So as far as we understand, this is bhava, you know, buddhi. We have to get the senses engaged, indriya. We have to get the mind engaged, thinking about Krishna, you know, desiring Krishna, and then willing, thinking, feeling, and willing. But then also we have to have the right attitude. You know, why we're chanting our rounds, why we're following four principles. You know, that's buddhi, indriya, manas, buddhi, and then or bhava. You know, the perspective, the feeling, anubhava, very intense, proper attitude. Again, we like the example of that when an airplane is landing, one devotee, Krishna Tanu, he's a pilot for Argentinian Airlines, and he flies 747s. And so here you're coming down at the runway, and there's three different aspects to the attitude that an airplane can have: pitch, roll, and yaw. Pitch, of course, is if the nose is up or down. Roll is whether the, you know, the left wing is higher than the right wing, and yaw is whether the left wing is kind of liking to land before the right wing. So the airplane can have all these different, you know, attitude problems. And you haven't got much range. I don't know what you're bringing down. Something like maybe like, you know, 175, no more than that. It must be several thousand tons of aluminum with 500 human beings and everything else. And you've got maybe like a 7 foot or 8 foot, less than that probably, maybe about 8 foot margin. And you've got to have the exact proper attitude or else there's going to be a real Ras Vibhats, improper mixture of mellows when the airplane hits the runway. So Lord Brahma had the proper attitude, you know, manishita, very, very thoughtful, you know, very, very inquisitive, and anubhava, you know, very, very proper attitude towards his austerities. And now Krishna is saying, because of that, you get the highest perfectional, you know, result, you know, which is to see my abode. So the purport then probably goes on very nicely with this. Let's go on here on number 5, if you would please. Okay, purport. The highest perfectional stage of life is to know the Lord by actual perception, by the grace of the Lord. You know, and what's that? Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. The most, the highest perfection is direct perception of the Lord by the grace of the Lord. This can be attained by everyone who is willing to discharge the act of devotional service to the Lord as enjoined in the revealed scriptures that are standard and accepted by the bona fide acharyas, spiritual masters. So it's not enough just to, you know, execute so-called devotional service. And because we hear this, all the, what are these guys called, the Manichaeists and, you know, so many people, they follow the rules and regulations, you know, but it has to be according to the proper attitude as the acharyas, you know, tell us like that. Next slide, number 6. For example, the Bhagavad Gita is the approved Vedic literature accepted by all the great acharyas, such as Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, Chaitanya, Vishwanath, Baladev, Siddhanta Saraswati, and many others. In that Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna asks that one always be mindful of him, always be his devotee, always worship him, and always bow down before him. Mamana babababa, mamana babamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Yeah. And by doing so, one is sure to go back home, back to Godhead without a doubt. So, of course, there's the attitude. You know, we have to be bowing down to the Lord, be fixing our mind upon him, and then we go back to Godhead. Well, number 7, please. In other places, also the same order is there, that one give up all other engagements and fully surrender unto the Lord without hesitation. My goodness, fully surrender without hesitation. And the Lord will give such a devotee all protection. So these are the secrets of attaining the highest perfectional stage. Secrets. Lord Brahma exactly followed these principles without any superiority complex. And thus he attained the highest perfectional stage, you know, of experiencing the abode of the Lord and the Lord himself with all his paraphernalia. I guess some crick going on there. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. So I was thinking about this section here. It was reminding me because, you know, I think it was one of the verses we're studying here. It said that whatever obstacles there are in completing this, the surrendering process, they must be given up. If the family becomes an obstacle, then Prabhupada said they must be given up, like that. But then he says if they're not an obstacle, then one doesn't have to take sannyas like Prabhupada did. And of course, the idea is there that everyone should give up, take a vow of giving up social intercourse. By 50 years old, Prabhupada is recommending, you know, take vanaprast, and then very, very useful, of course, the final separation, the gross separation between the family, husband and wife, everybody else, towards seeing everybody from a spiritual perspective and having an eternal connection with everybody. So I was thinking myself, because I can see, I sometimes deviate from, you know, my personal responsibilities in devotional service a little bit, because I like the comfort of belonging to a large religious institution where I can move here and there, and where, you know, people are donating freely, and we can be allowed to do what we do. And then beyond my religious affiliations, then there's also just the academic association, which can be very, very, you know, gratifying, even subtly more gratifying than the gross connections. There's a Nobel laureate, a conference, it used to be a conference, it was organized on the East Coast by one university. It was the Nobel Conference on Aesthetics. And they had different Nobel laureates contribute their ideas about aesthetics in science, beauty in science. Of course, very interesting. And one of them wrote, very nice, you know, for preaching, one of them wrote about the almost inconceivable pleasures of the mind. Like that. So when you start getting on this level of discussing these ideas, and these subtleties, and, you know, and especially, for example, in Bengal, with all this very, very rich, you know, heritage and culture there. So I see we become so attached to, you know, the subtle material aspect of this academic work. And we don't want to disturb the professors and our relationships, you know, so we may deviate from complete surrender, you know, to Krishna, you know. So you know, that's the secret of actually seeing the Lord's abode. And Lord Brahma, you know, did it, you know, both gross and subtle, complete surrender, upper attitude. Okay, then go on down number 8, please. Okay. And Prabhupada finishes the purport by saying, impersonal realization of the effulgence of the Lord's body is not the highest perfectional stage, nor is the stage of Paramatma realization. The word manihita is significant. Everyone is falsely or factually proud of his so-called learning. There's a nice one now. Yeah. Falsely proud or factually proud of his so-called learning. But the Lord says that the highest perfectional stage of learning is to know him and his abode, devoid of illusion. So again, nādanam, nājanam, nasundarīṁ, kavitam, va, jagadīśa, kāmāye, kavitam. All these things describe in poetical language. You know? And so, you know, and again, somebody may be a cook. It's his nature, big, robust fellow, you know, good sensitivity. So very natural, being in the kitchen, cooking for festivals, you're distributing lots of prasadam, attracting people, but at the same time, too, realizing that this is also this subtle attachment to sense gratification. And that when he's choosing the menus, or she, then they're choosing them in terms of what they would like, you know. Yeah. Or somebody else may be an administrator, keeping so many, you know, so many deviant people in line, and they're praising him and saying, thank you, Prabhu, I was really getting out of line there, you put me back right in the right place. And on like that, you know. Controlling nature, but very generous nature, the people who are controlling them. You know? But of course, it's the same subtle attachment that can be there, that I'm everybody's dearmost friend. You know? All this temple fair paraphernalia is all for my satisfaction. You know? So on and on, or else again in our position in the intellectual atmosphere, you know, manishita, the Prabhupada says one should not be too proud of his own ideas. See, it's so easy. Somebody else is proud of his wife or his car or his position, you know, or his physical strength, you know, all these things. But then scholars, they may renounce all these things. We were talking to Radhika Raman Das about kind of the ethos amongst the theologians. And he said it's very kind of humorous because you have to have a theologian's, you have to dress like a theologian, you have to drive a theologian's car. You know, if you have like a Lamborghini sports car, then all the eyebrows will raise up, you know, like that and stuff. You know? I go by when I'm coming and going every evening to Nitya Gaur Sundar's house. We go out for a walk every evening and associate. I pass by the local fire station. And it's amazing, almost every time, there's five pickup trucks in the parking lot. So if you're going to be a fireman, you've got to drive a pickup truck. So same way, scholars, they haven't got all these things, but they got their ideas. And oh boy, you know, they get so attached, so proud of their ideas like that. So even if they are good ideas, you have to go ahead and not be falsely or factually proud of his so-called learning. Because ultimately it's all factual. The other side of the point is that it's describing, this came up in an earlier class about pride, and I think it's Shivas Thakur and Mini Swoop Damodar are talking about the goddess of fortune when she comes to the Hare Panchami festival. And she comes and attacks her husband with her opulence like that. And Krishna kind of smiles, and she harasses the Brijvasis. So they start talking about pride. And then I think it's Swoop Damodar talks about the gopis. Their pride is like a many-branched river, you know. So there's that aspect of pride too, but then there's no pride for one's own personal qualifications independent of Krishna, but actually it's a pride in Krishna, you know, how great Krishna is and so on. So very subtle, and they say difficult to dovetail. You know? So everyone is falsely or factually proud of his own learning. But the highest perfectional stage of learning is to know him and his abode devoid of illusion. So yeah, we should take some pride in our work and our service. We really did something. Jayananda, who we experienced as kind of being humility personified, they asked him one time, what is humility? And he said, humility is not being artificially big or artificially small. Humility is really understanding more and more and more and more precisely what is your real position, like that. And so pride is the other side of that. It's then glorifying, respecting, promoting your position. You know? So a businessman, one of our friends is a business fellow, was. He had a parking lot cleaning business in Miami. And he had maybe like, I don't know what it was, maybe 50 different teams that would go out every night on these kind of small, like, they're big. One guy would sit on the things. They're not as big as the ones that go in the street, but pretty big. So one guy would go ahead and just, you know, sweep the entire parking lots, these big malls. Otherwise, they really fall apart within just a few days. Sweep them, and another guy would change the trash boxes and pick up stuff. So and he had like a lot of employees like that, other fellow. And he showed me he had 6 different suits, you know, expensive suits, not real expensive, but, you know, when you look at them, you can tell these weren't cheap, you know. And he said he had to have 6 because that way his employees couldn't figure out, like, you know, how many suits he had. Oh, yeah, yeah, Mr. Junior, Thursday, Mr. Gennaro wears that suit. So it was 6, that way it always was ending up a different suit a different day. And his employees kind of thought they had, you know, the boss has unlimited opulence. Chanika Pandit says the same thing. The king should not be too frightening, or else people won't be able to enjoy themselves in his presence. And he should also not be too mild, or else then they'll start to take advantage of him, and they won't, you know, listen to him. He can't do his job properly. So this whole thing about being proud and the proper attitude really is a matter of self-realization. And then we see that, you know, yeah, for to do his job, Kshatriya has to have weapons, good dress, and social prestige. You know, if you're a manager, you got to look like a manager. If you're the mayor's wife, you got to look like the mayor's wife. So, yeah. But as you go on, you realize more and more, this is just for Krishna, just for Krishna. So it goes beyond being small and being nothing. It goes on into transcendence, like that. So that's our kind of realization. Prabhupada's purport is very nice in this topic, and continuing with the same theme of how Brahma was able to see the Lord's abode. And when he saw that, then of course we automatically can react properly ourselves. You think of a person can react to us like this and that, but if we go to the person's house, you know, then we have chairs to sit in, temperature control with air conditioning, heating, you know, interaction with eating and working on some plans in the library, swimming, you know, dressing, you know. So that person's abode then, we know him, you know, even better by seeing his house and his associates and stuff like that. And we can become fully realized what is our relationship with him, you know. So going on in this theme, Next slide, number 9, please, Master. We're thinking of the Lord's most confidential abode. Sri Brajamando Ki Jai, Damodar Vrata Ki Jai. Yeah. And I hope you can see this. It's a map of Brajamandala. And probably you can see the Jamuna there. She's pretty big. She comes down and makes a big turn and goes down a little bit more. And about maybe one third of the way down the map, you can see is Vrindavan. Vrindavan. Yeah. And then opposite that on the left, our left.
Maharaj, I have to interrupt. All we see is Sri Vrindavan Mahamrita, Nectar of the Glories of Vrindavan. Just the title, but there's no map.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. What happened? Maybe I guess you got an older version. Okay, so what you have is Vrindavan Dhamahimamrita.
Yeah, it's just the title, I thought, but nothing else.
Okay, go to the next slide. What do you get?
I did. It says, thank you very much.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I sent you an older version.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll just describe it myself and with my vision, my transcendental vision, and my stupid attitude. Okay, Sri Brajamandala Ki Jai. So in front of us, if you can do this too, is a nice picture. So right in the middle is just about in the middle is Vrindavan. And as we're facing it, it's on the left side of the Jamuna. And I think it's all the, there's 12 forests. I think 7 on the left side as we're facing it. And those belong to Krishna and his gang. And on the other side, the right side, there's 5 forests, and they belong to Balaram and his gang. So even now, as the Brajmanda Parikrama, if you go around there, because in the Parikrama, we would just go right down into the Brijbasi's existence. Like I was saying before, we would just stay in the farmhouses with wooden shutters, and such a nice experience of you know, if you really get into it, still, you know, the Vrindavan Dham is there everywhere. So if you're on the eastern side of the Jamuna, some guy may say to you, how's it go? Dauji Kabaya, you know? And you have to say, Krishna Kanaya, who's the younger brother of Balaram? You know, you have to admit that Krishna is the younger brother, like that. Otherwise, they'll grab you and wrestle with you until you admit it. That, yeah, Balaram is the boss, you know? So many wonderful places within the Braj Mandala, and Lord Chaitanya went there. He went there himself and experienced it. Again, like Mahesh was pointing out, all of our ISKCON temples, Prabhupada says every one of our ISKCON temples, every corner is Vaikuntha, you know. Yeah. But Vrindavan Dham is also, you know, Vrindavan Dham. And so with different devotional perspectives, different service, and we take advantage of different aspects, the holy names, prasadam, the deities, the temple, and Vrindavan Dham. You know? So very, very nice perception. But the perception has to be really by hearing. Otherwise, you can be on the Dham and not in the Dham. Now, of course, so much of the Dham, even within our own experience, you know, since 1978 when we went there, The inner parikrama around the city of Vrindavan has all now been covered, you know, with this nasty asphalt. So that's not kind of the Dham. That's on the Dham. If you pull it up, the dust of Vrindavan is under that. You know? And last time I was there, I noticed that if you walk on the edge of it, if you're careful, all the way around you could walk the dust barefoot. There were a couple places here and there where I had to walk on the Dham rather than in the Dham. But mostly it's like that. If you're still in Kali Yuga, one by one these different places will disappear, you know. But if we're Manishita, ingenious, you know, we will be able to see the inside, you know, see the inside of Brajamandala, you know, and then have a relationship with it like that, you know. So that's one aspect of seeing the Lord's abode. Another aspect we had in our slideshow here was Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.43. Krishna svadam opagate dharma jnana ribisaha kalo nasta drishamesha puranarko denoditaha kalo nasta drisha. So those who have lost this vision, lost this darshan, lokanam, darshan of the Lord's abode because of the dense darkness of Kali Yuga. So we can see Kali Yuga. It's there in Vrindavan Dham. It's there in our temples. You know? And because of that, maybe we lose our vision. So where is it? You know? It's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Can't remember the verse now. Mahamune Chakram Bhagavan Rishi Nishraya Shraya Lokasya Idam Bhagavata Nama Purnam Brahma Samitam Uttamashloka Charitam Bhachakaram Bhagavan Rishi Chakara. It's the same thing. That he composed this, and so Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look at the end of that purport, 1.3.43, Prabhupada says Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study of Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the summum bonum of life. Wow. Lord Sri Krishna personified. We must therefore accept Srimad Bhagavatam as a direct representation of Lord Krishna. One who can see Srimad Bhagavatam can see also Lord Sri Krishna in person. They are identical. Die. So there's another abode. I would say this is the idea in Kali Yuga, that the literary incarnation. In Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya comes as the ideal preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in Srimad Bhagavatam is the manifestation that people can appreciate. Prabhupada's saying it also, that even if an atheist goes to Vrindavan Dham, he will feel separation from Krishna. I've seen things like this, you know. Same thing with Bhagavatam. Again, I've seen big atheists, you know, who totally accept evolution as the cause of life. These are more Indian scholars who know the Bhagavatam. But this fellow, it was just amazing. He was saying that the highest manifestation of evolution was the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there was nothing like it anywhere. Isn't it wonderful? Evolution of human intellect, evolution of species, in the end produced the Bhagavad Puran. Like that. Yes. So even atheists, you know, can have this experience and relationship with Krishna in his abode, this manifest. Maybe some little bit of opening in the heart like that. You know? So during Kartik, of course, very nice to contemplate and meditate. And devotees, everybody develops, of course, their own specific, you know, beautiful realizations of Krishna. And the Sangha is such a mercy for opportunity to exchange these with people. You know, so nice. I feel very, you know, honored to be able to participate. We try and listen to every class like that. You know? And so then, you know, Vrindavan Dham, going there doing Kartik. And, of course, again, the monsoon season is over many times. And the cold winter, easy it starts to come. You know, winter starts to come. But there's a lot of time in there where it was fall, which has a very, very mystical feeling. And I know, for example, I would go to the Krishna Balaram Mandir, the beautiful courtyard with the black and white, you know, checkered tiles there. And during the afternoon, after the lunch and before the 4:30 arti, there's only maybe like 5, 6, 7 people there, and the Akhanda Sankirtan's going on. And so you can chant there, and this is such a nice time. You just ride in the sham, and Radha Shama Sundar just right behind the doors. And different impressions come, like, okay, here we are sitting out in Vrindavan, and it's warm, and the sun coming down, and you know, kind of keeping an eye out that Jatila's not coming, or somebody. And Radha and Shama Sundar enjoying their pastimes of resting together. So very, very easy for let different thoughts come about Krishna and chant, and look at the beautiful pictures on the wall. You know, it's a very, very wonderful time just externally to stimulate, you know, proper feelings of Krishna consciousness and Krishna's abode. So then Srimad Bhagavatam, and then what we have here then is Sri Vrindavan Dham Mahimamrita, the nectarian glories of Sri Vrindavan Dham, and it's by Prabodhananda Saraswati, who is the uncle of Jiva Goswami, and he's an incarnation of Tunga Vidya. She's the gopi on our left, on the far left. And Tunga means apex, and Vidya means knowledge, so she's the apex of all knowledge. And Lalita's attitude, to our understanding, is very, very, you know what, critical. If Krishna shows up 10 minutes late for some birthday party, you know, she's all over his case. Where were you? This and that. But Tungavidya's attitude was, well, come on, Lalita, give him a chance. Maybe the guy had a bona fide excuse, you know. And so Lalita's going to argue with her, no way. You know, when our Radha organizes a birthday party for Krishna, he should be here 5 minutes early, to speak of 10 minutes late, you know. So these are different expansions of Radharani's attitude. And our acharyas, in Bhaktisiddhanta, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, I think his commentary, he says that the so-called followers of Rupa Goswami and Prabodhananda Saraswati created an argument. You know, but there was never any disagreement between Prabodhananda Saraswati and Rupa Goswami. They both fully appreciated each other like that. But maybe because we are Rupanugas, you know, we don't follow so much Prabodhananda Saraswati's perspective sometimes. But Prabhupada quotes him, you know, like that, commentaries. So then from the Vrindavan Dhamma Himamrita, it's composed of shatakas, or 100 verses. And I think there's like 23 or something shatakas that we have. And of course, he was a very erudite, you know, Sri Vaishnava Brahmin. And you know, his Sanskrit was probably peerless, everything else. So as you're reading these, in Vrindavan Dham, like on the Parikrama, sitting in the dust, it's such a very, very intense experience of the place there. So I picked a couple out of the first shataka. And he starts off the entire thing by saying, meditating on the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Murli Manohar, placing myself in the dust of Lord Chaitanya's feet, and respectfully offering obeisances to the great devotees of the Lord, who are so many oceans of transcendental virtue, like this Isanga. I shall now happily begin to praise the transcendental opulences of Sri Vrindavan. Number two, I am not strong enough to go to the far shore of the great nectar ocean of Vrindavan's glories. Who can go there? However, because I love Vrindavan, I shall now dip into that ocean. I pray that this endeavor may become successful and bring an auspicious result. If I adopt a Madan Mohan attitude here, or perspective, it's very interesting to go through and change the word Vrindavan for ISKCON. You know, I am not strong enough to go to the far, far shore of ISKCON's glories. But because I love ISKCON, I will now dip into that ocean. It makes a very, very stimulating idea about what is ISKCON and who are we. Okay, we'll go on with Vrindavan here. Number three. O Sri Vrindavan, please reveal in my heart your wonderful transcendental form, full of the most confidential spiritual knowledge and bliss. Embarrassed to describe the highest nectar, the Upanishads only say, not this, not this. Where are you described? Let me go down here, our next slide. Day and night, number four, I glorify, oh my goodness, okay, I lost control of my slides there. Day and night I glorify Vrindavan, which is filled with the wonder of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna's pastimes, the wonder of the greatest sweetness, the ultimate nectar of Lord Hari, the sweetest, most beautiful, auspiciousness, and a flood of virtues, Anantasesha, Shiva, and a host of others cannot cross. Think of Vrindavan with love. Roll in its dust. Love it ardently. Please its moving and non-moving residence. Worship Sri Radha's birthplace. With all your heart, take shelter of Sri Vrindavan, the best of all holy places. Of course, Radharani was born in Ravel, which is down the river. So it's right across from Mathura, pretty much. You go down from Vrindavan on the west side, and you come to Mathura. And then you cross over there, and Ravel is there, but it's more inland a little bit. That's where Radharani appeared. And then right near there is Gokul on the coast, on the river. That's where Krishna appeared. And then Krishna moved to Chatikar, which is west of Vrindavan town. Of course, when you take the road down from Delhi, you get off the main road there at Chatikar. That's that place there. And go down the other little road towards Vrindavan. And when he moved there, then Radharani moved to Basanti. And Basanti is more west. And there's nothing much there, I think, really now. It's more like kind of little mandu. I mean, not even a mandu you can go inside of, as I remember. Yeah. And then Krishna moved with Nanda Maharaj to Nandagaon. And then Radharani's family moved to Barsana, like that. Barsana, Wali, Ki, Jai, Jai, Jai. And so roll in the dust. There's nothing more merciful than the dust of Sri Vrindavan Dham. If you roll in the dust of Vrindavan, it will be very easy for you to attain the same destination as that fortunate handful of pearls that was strung into a garland by Krishna himself and then hung around the neck of Radharani. If you roll in the dust of Vrindavan, it will be very easy to obtain the same position. Of course, we can also talk about rolling in the dust, dust of our temples. Yes. Worship is moving and non-moving residence. This includes the camels, I guess, too, who are extremely bizarre. You know, the pastimes of camels in Vrindavan is something unbelievable. Yeah. And the monkeys of Vrindavan go on with the pastimes of the monkeys in Vrindavan and trying to worship them. But especially Radha Shama Sundar, so manifest there in Vrindavan by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Then he goes on to say, number six, if the Vedanta does not directly describe Vrindavan, why should that matter to me? If the faulty logicians who are like serpents living in the Vedic literatures, ignore Vrindavan, why should I care? Even if the devotees of the Lord do not understand the glories of Vrindavan, how does that affect me? Even if my heart were pierced with thousands of thunderbolts, I would never leave ISKCON. Okay. I would never leave Vrindavan. Okay. A fanatic. When you read this, you realize that Tunga Vidya is a fanatic. You know, she's a fanatic about Vrindavan. Yeah. I meditate on Vrindavan where the cuckoos sing the fifth note. The flute plays splendid melodies. Peacocks sing and dance. Vines and trees bloom. Splendid and charming forests are wonderful with many birds and deer, and there are many splendid lakes, streams, and hills. Now, number 24. Today or tomorrow, this worthless material body will leave me, and all the material happiness connected with it will also leave. Because material happiness is temporary, it should be understood to be only a mirage of the real happiness. My mind, please abandon this false happiness and enjoy the real, eternal happiness of devotional service within the land of Vrindavan. So we got there in 1978, the year of Prabhupada's first Tirubhava festival. And it was very interesting in so many ways. It was after being a devotee and being austerities, 4 years of trying to be a devotee and struggling and studying and austerities. And finally we were going to leave. And we had such an intense experience that really my attitude was, my God, I don't want to leave Vrindavan. I just want to go off and, if I have to, and just disappear into the forest and starve to death someplace here. I would prefer to do that, to go back to the other aspect of this material world. But then I got this kind of strong impression that all the gopis and everybody else were saying, but if you don't go, then how will anybody else know about it? So we were mentioning this. I think Pushkar is saying this, quoting somebody. We have to get out there, book distributor. Somehow or other, we have to get out. And quote General Schwarzkopf or whatever it is, it doesn't take a hero Just get out the way you can. I went across the street, down the our kind of the mall, which is economically kind of falling apart, to the Murfreesboro book bin or something, you know. And it's a local bookstore there, kind of strange place. And the guy was putting up all kinds of books. He said, "We're not actually open, but come on in, come on in." But I wore my full Vaishnava dress there. And we made up a nice brochure for our NEOS organization. Finally got it worked out. It's got the elephant on it with the blind men. And this is what we are, what NEOS is, North American Institute. We're trying to create a forum where different classical cultures can contribute to making a better world. And of course, you know, we're from one tradition, no doubt about it, but it doesn't mean we don't appreciate other people. You know? So I gave him that. He kind of looked at it and nodded, you know. And then we're talking that, yeah, they do special events, and yeah, if we had some books and wanted to do some, you know, regular, like once a month, like a little reading circle, and, you know, try and have our books there for sale through them, that would be maybe a good idea. And yeah, tea and coffee are acceptable, you know. So even ourselves, we're extremely shy. Get out there, however you can do it. People can do it different ways, you know. For a lady to wear a sari around like that, some ladies say it's not so difficult because, you know, you're a lady, you dress different ways. But for a man to wear a dhoti outside, it needs a little more pressure, you know. So everybody has some facility to get out and to kind of meet your circle, you know. Make your circle Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious. Deliver your circle like that. And so then, you know, give our internal consciousness of Vrindavan Dham, which you've seen by the attitude, which are developing by the association of Prabhupada, you know, ISKCON, Vrindavan, you know, give that to other people. And as long as we have a little bit of Krishna consciousness when we're out there, then Krishna, the gopis, all the Brijbasis, they can hang on to us. And this is what Brahma asks. Brahma asks the Lord later on, "I'm going to be dealing with all this crazy stuff. I just don't want to become so confused by it that I forget you." And then Krishna says, "I promise you, you won't forget me," like that. So if you want to see a copy of this Vrindavan Dham Mahimamrita, it's online at the Vrindavan website, www.vrindavan-dham, Vrindavan-dham. So there's no A's at the end, vrindavandham.com. Okay. So that's kind of the presentation we had. Then any questions, comments, complaints?
Maharaj, at the end, I was able to look it up online. We're following the whole process on the Vrindavan-dham.
Yeah, somebody's microphone is bouncing away, making lots of noise there. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
No, I just said that we were able to find it.
Oh, yeah, it's so nice.
Because
you go, for example, like he'll go into long sections about Radha Kund and some of the Shatakas. So it seems like he must have been like in his wandering here and there. He was at Radha Kund or something, you know. And then something else, he'll go on like this, like 10, 15 verses describing the qualities of Radharani with Kusha. And Kusha Krata's translations are like his translations that he said, they're like a little bit rough and, you know, some mistakes and so on. But at the same time, too, his poetry is just so intense in many ways like that. You know, so his translation, that's the one that's on the Vrindavan Dham website. So different translations gives different perspectives, but Kusha Krata is very nice in that, the intensity like that. And he left his body in Vrindavan. If anybody tells you to leave ISKCON, I will cut out his tongue. If anybody tries to drag me out by ISKCON from ISKCON by force, I will kill him. Even if I'm so poor that I have to steal from others to live, I will never leave ISKCON. Okay. It makes a very funny perspective when you change the word ISKCON for Vrindavan. But it's the same thing. He goes on, he says, anybody who sees imperfections in Vrindavan is an idiot, a fool. There are no imperfections in ISKCON. ISKCON is perfect in every way. They are simply the object of everybody's laughter. I pray I do not see their faces at the moment of my death. But, okay.
I know you don't see this because you're on the telephone, but I'll read it to you. Sunil from Mumbai, he's been regularly coming for some weeks now, every day, morning and evening. Always has nice questions. He asks, Prabhuji, that means Maharaj, please tell difference between Shuddha Sattva and Vishuddha Sattva. Are both the same?
I've never seen Prabhupada use the word pretty much Shuddha Sattva. I mean, I guess, it does occur sometimes. I mean, as far as I understand, Vishuddha Sattva and Shuddha Sattva is basically talking about the same thing. Maybe there's some real subtle distinction. Because to me, when I was becoming a devotee, I couldn't figure out what was wrong with goodness. Okay, passion and ignorance, you want to avoid it, but what's wrong with goodness, you know? But goodness in the material world, Sattva Gun, is always contaminated with either rajas or tamas, either hankering or lamentation. I'm in the present moment, but I'm eating, right? I'm eating, but I'm hankering that I finished off my subji and there's no more available. I'm lamenting, or I'm hankering when they're going to start serving out the jalebis and the rasagulas and stuff, you know. So I can't really appreciate what I'm actually eating. Yeah, so that's the problem with material sattva. But as we do austerities, just by associating with the Bharat Rup, you know, just by having a very natural pantheistic association with the material world as it's created, with a little devotional attitude towards it, you know, then we become purified to Shuddha Sattva. At that point, there's no material contamination, and we realize that all there is the present moment. And that all of my future is just thoughts, and all of my past is just thoughts. That's how I'm experiencing them for the most part. And I get free from those. And I, this here in the present moment, at that point, the material world becomes an accurate reflection of the spiritual world. I've realized that everything is spiritual, Brahman, and I realized that the form of that spiritual nature, the Paramatma, you know. And then in Vishuddha Sattva, Vasudev Sattva, it's also called, Vasudev can take birth. In that position, then it becomes easy then to go to Ananda, Satchitananda. You know? That's kind of our perspective. But as far as I understand, when the Prabhupada talks about it, Shuddha Sattva means the same as the Vishuddha Sattva stage. And that's the maybe the sat existence of the sandini existence. And as we go on, then the sambit, which is the features of the spiritual world, become manifest. And we go on more than the ananda, kaladini shakti becomes manifest, which includes all the others.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Mahesh here from Kona.
Okay, you can't get off the island, can you?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One is, I don't know if you're aware, I just got the information that Krishna Balaram Swami just passed away a couple months ago, and I didn't know about that.
But I just thank you.
Krishna Balaram, he was in Berkeley for many years when you were there.
Yeah, I know him for a long time. I was kind of meditating on him there. It's interesting, okay.
Yeah, he passed away in Long Island. Krishna Balaram Swami, not the Brijabasi, but
Creon Valentine.
Yeah, it's
Creon Valentine. That was his name.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, he passed away, and he was a very good friend of mine. Actually, I just wanted to let you know that because I think you knew him quite well.
Oh no, I did. Yeah, we traveled together, different things like that. We had association in San Francisco. You know.
Yeah.
Even like a few years ago. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. The second thing is, why don't you maybe elucidate this for me? Because, you know, I really appreciate that you brought your lecture, especially talking about Dauchi Temple, Dauchi and Raval. You know, I was in these places in 2011, 3 years ago. Now, I could feel that there was a tremendous spiritual power in these places, but the places today, they are really, the worship there and the way they are managed is not Prabhupada's standard. And I was thinking, wow, how could this be? I mean, you could feel the spiritual potency, like the kirtan we had at the Dauchi temple was unbelievable. I mean, it was amazing. We could jump, you know, 5 feet into the sky or something. It was incredible. But you could feel that the deity worship was not up to standard, not Prabhupada's standard anyway. So how do you explain that? How could there be places and then the worship?
It's interesting because somebody asked Prabhupada when he was in Berkeley, he said, Swamiji, are there problems in your temples? And I heard Prabhupada respond, you know, ho, ho, ho. This is the material world. There are problems everywhere. And so we get this fact that even when Krishna was personally present 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan, there were demons coming. And they were so ferocious, they were causing the girls to have abortions, miscarriages like that. They were, you know, flesh-eating horses and stuff. And it was like, you know, that was Krishna personally present. You know? So, okay, so this is Gokula, Goloka. This is Gokula, H-A-J-K-L. This is Gokula. So in the Boma Lila, these things go on, you know, and Krishna allows them to be go on like that for certain purposes like that, you know. These demons come. Like when I was in Vrindavan, the Purukkama, I was looking at all these motorcycles. You know, they did try and run you down sometimes or something. It's really terrifying, you know. All these motorcycles as Keshiasura and all the tractors as Aristasura, you know. So, but when we go through out in the Vrijbashi, out in the, you know, the Dham and there and the Purukkama, you'll come to like these little temples and they're very old. You know, some of them have been there for a long time and they have a lot of lila associated with them. And the pujari will kind of welcome us there. Maybe we'll stop for a little bit in the parikrama. And he's like in simple Brijbasi dress and, you know, what do you call it? Kind of, you know, maybe the clothes aren't so new like that, but they're okay. His pujari is clean, beard, young man, maybe 28, 30. And he starts talking in English, you know. And then he says, my father and my family have been to pujaris here for many years. And my father sent me to Delhi, you know, and I got a degree in engineering, and I had a good job. But he said, but I didn't like it, you know. So I came back, and I've taken over as the pujari now, and they have a few of Prabhupada's books, maybe, you know, Third Canto, mm-hmm. Part 1 or this. And they're starting to read them, and more we're hearing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know. And so that's what I see. It's just that these demons are always attacking everything else, like this and that, to do with deity worship, so many things, and covering over the consciousness. But, you know, we as stupid Westerners, you know, representing Srila Prabhupada in different ways, the Brijabasis, they can be saved from all this stuff, you know, by Prabhupada's books. And so introducing those books, there are little book distribution even for them in the proper way. And Prabhupada explains this to the next generation of Brijbasis, and many of them are like that. Many of them are, they're looking at things the same way we look at it. They're trained in this industrialized perspective. So for them, Prabhupada's books just touch them right away, the way he explains it. So that's what I would say is just a natural result of Kali Yuga. And if you can penetrate, you can go beyond that. You'll see why it's happening, what's happening. And then if you can preach and everything else, then yeah, I've seen it again and again. These Brijbasis and different people, pujaris, they do take up ideas. They just correct things. And it's really, really, I have many examples I can cite of like how ISKCON and Prabhupada have really purified the Dham and stuff like that, Navadweep and Vrindavan.
Thank you. That was very good. I appreciate that.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
The residents of the Dham have such security to be born there.
Oh my God.
You can't criticize it. One time, you know the story of Ramanujacharya was in Jagannath Puri, and he saw these pandas they're eating fish, they're chewing pan, and I'm going to bring all my high Brahmins from South India here to take over. And he woke up miles and miles away in the Shiva temple. The Jagannath came to him. You leave my pandas alone. They're my men.
Yeah, I'll take care of them. Yeah. Where was Putin born?
I don't know.
In Vrindavan.
In Vrindavan.
Yeah, there's one village we go there. It's called Kechari. And, of course, Bakasura and Agasura were her brother and sister, you know, quite a family, you know. So maybe they're also Brijbasi. So Putin is Brijbasi.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there on the Parikrama, and Radharaman Maharaj, you know, Indian devotee, he's telling us this whole story. He's giving the katha in Hindi, how this is Kechari, and this is where Putin is born, and this and that and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one old man with a little boy kind of sitting there just listening and everything. He said, oh, no, she wasn't born here. She wasn't born here, you know. And that's a mistake, you know. And so he apologizes in Hindi, and then in English he told us, he said, everybody in Vrindavan knows she was born.
No,
everybody accepts it. But the people here never accept it, you know. So it's
Raghunath Das Goswami says, I would rather hear the gossipy talk of the Brajavasis than hear Shastra anywhere else.
Yeah. There's still, and many times the Brajavasis forget that they're Brajavasis.
Oh, yeah.
They're carrying all this crazy stuff, and you can see it is the depth, the subtlety. It's just, it's not an ordinary way they do these things. The way they live their ordinary lives is not ordinary. It's got a certain unbelievable depth to it many times, you know. But, okay, Putin is Putin, and when Putin comes, we run. We get out of there. We grab our babies and don't toss our babies to Putin and say, hey, mama, here's my baby. Well, okay, I guess we should go ahead now and engage in Gopastami and worship the cow. And thank you all so very, very much. I'm sorry. I tried to check the PowerPoint shows before I send them.
Yeah, we couldn't see the illustration of Vrindavan. Oh.
Yeah, it's nice one. You know. I mean, I'll send it, you know. But I'll try and be more careful to check them before I send them because it goes to different levels. And it takes me a whole week to kind of put it together. Yeah. So thank you so very much. It's really nice.
Hey,
to
you.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Happy Halloween.
Hare Krishna.